Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 10th of February 2017. Our new computer is not yet completely set up, so I'm afraid there's no music. So we go straight on. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Lang, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. And your readers today are Maria Head.
Hello.
John Regan.
Hello there.
And Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. So, the main headlines this week are Next Quits the City, Police Launch Abuse Inquiry, and Female Dean Set to Make History. Can we have the story behind the first headline, please, Maria?
Of course. Next Quits the City. Another major Winchester shop is to close. Next, on the High Street, will shut its doors in June when its lease runs out. The move comes after a plan to turn the top two floors of the building into luxury flats, which would involve some retail space being lost, was approved in December, despite concerns about turning shopping space into housing in the city. A former temporary employee at Next told the Chronicle that the full-time staff at the shop had been informed about the closure at the end of last year. It is understood this will affect 15 full-time staff. The news comes as Winchester has had a number of major retailers pull out of the city, including Beals, River Island and Monsoon in the last year. Next, and the owners of the building, the London Borough of Southwark, had been trying to find a deal, but had differences in valuations of the rent. Council leader Caroline Horrell said, although she was disappointed, it will be an opportunity for another retailer. Councillor Horrell said, it is disappointing when a shop shuts, but Winchester has a strong local economy with new names appearing on the High Street, so this also presents an opportunity. Successful businesses are the lifeblood of the city, which is why the council backs them and gives priority to schemes such as Central Winchester Regeneration and Station Approach. Councillor Ian Tate had conversations with the planning agent after hearing concerns about the future of Next. Councillor Tate said, I have contacted the property agent dealing with it for Southwark. His comments were that Next drive a very hard bargain and are robust in their approach, and they are indicating if they do not get the deal they want, they will not renew the lease. Many people have approached Southwark for the whole or part of the premises and are willing to pay market rates. There are many people that want to take over the premises. James Tibbles from agents Larrabee Land negotiated with Next and said the difference in the valuation of the rent led to difficulties. He said, their expectation of rental falls some way off what we can get on the open market. Their point is Winchester has limited opportunities as the town has evolved, and as a company, they have to see if they can look for a shop in the town or look at an out-of-town shop, or one in Southampton. Former council leader Stephen Godfrey said, I'm sure there is a lot of interest in the site. Change is always unsettling, but businesses come and go, and it is a sign of a lively economy. Catherine Turnus, executive director of Winchester Business Improvement District, said, I am disappointed that the agent and Next haven't been able to reach a mutually convenient decision on the renewal of the lease. My concern is to ensure that the ground floor remains a retail unit, but sadly there is very little control over this decision. The City Council have the option to deny planning permission for a change of use, but their reasoning has to be a sound justification based on criteria predominantly surrounding environmental and access issues. In my opinion, Next leaving only makes the argument stronger for building Central Winchester. More floor space will allow for more choice and thus open up competitive rates being available on the market for retailers to remain in Winchester, as well as offering a reasonable opportunity for new entrants to the city. I am informed there are a list of brands wanting to set up here, but the unit has to be available at the right price. A spokesman for Next said, "We can confirm that unfortunately the store is closing in June."
Yes, police launch abuse inquiry. Police have launched an investigation into allegations of historical abuse of students, some of whom were Winchester-based, by a former colleague of the Archbishop of Canterbury. A series of accusations have been levelled against John Smith, a former leader at the Iwern holiday camp for teenage boys, which had close links with the church, and where Justin Welby worked as a dormitory officer in the late 1970s. These allegations came to light following a Channel 4 News investigation into the prominent QC and part-time judge who's now living in South Africa. It's reported that some of these young men met Smith at Winchester College, but there's no suggestion that any abuse took place at the college or with the knowledge of its staff. It's been alleged that the abuse took place in the shed of the garden of Smith's Winchester home. Mr. Smith was not reported to the police at the time and was allowed to leave the country after agreeing never to work with children again. But Hampshire Constabulary is now urging anyone who was a victim of the abuse to come forward. Winchester College have admitted they failed to report the allegations at the time to the police. And the Church of England have also apologised unreservedly and admitted that they have, to quote, failed terribly over the handling of abuse allegations. The Iwern Trust, which oversaw the Christian camps, was made aware of the allegations and compiled a report in 1982, but failed to tell the police, Channel 4 News says. Graham Tilby, the Church of England's National Safeguarding Advisor, said the church had, quote, immediately informed police after they were alerted by an alleged victim in 2013. A statement on behalf of Mr. Welby said, "John Smith was one of the many leaders at the camp, and although the Archbishop worked with him, he was not part of the inner circle of friends. No one discussed any allegations of abuse by John Smith with him." The statement continues, "We recognise that many institutions failed catastrophically, but the church is meant to hold itself to a far, far higher standard, and we have failed terribly. For that, the Archbishop apologises unequivocally and unreservedly." A statement from Winchester College said, "Winchester College deeply regrets the terrible ordeals of the victims and pays tribute to their courage in speaking out. The college has never sought to conceal these dreadful events."
Female dean set to make history. A new era dawns at Winchester Cathedral on Saturday when its first female dean is installed. The Very Reverend Catherine Ogle will be instituted as the 38th Dean of Winchester at a service at 3 p.m. The installation service marks the formal beginning of her ministry in a service which follows, roughly, the shape of evensong. Writing in Winchester Cathedral's newsletter shortly after the announcement of her appointment, the acting dean, Canon Rowley Reams, said, "We have much to give thanks for in Dean Catherine's appointment, not least her experience of 6 years as a dean in a multi-faith setting. This will be a great blessing to us as we reflect with her on how our Christian presence responds to the contemporary climate. Many who heard her speak briefly at the announcement of her appointment were impressed by her bearing and reassured by her speaking that the cathedral will be in safe hands." The Very Reverend Ogle is the former Dean of Birmingham Cathedral, a position which she held for 6 years. She has pioneered engagement with parishes and forged connections with institutions and charities across the city. Her work has also included collaborations with local artists to promote engagement with communities, and she has also overseen Birmingham Cathedral embracing the use of social media. Dean Catherine has also led Birmingham's cathedral through the celebration of its 300th anniversary, overseeing major restoration works and leading fundraising efforts. The Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, said, "As Dean of Birmingham, Catherine has led the cathedral with great wisdom, engaging with various challenges and repeatedly showing what a capable and effective leader she is. Her appointment as Dean of Winchester is an excellent one for the cathedral, for the city, and for the diocese more broadly. Catherine's focus and passion for mission makes her an ideal fit at a time when we are beginning to make Winchester a more mission-shaped diocese. I am delighted by her appointment. Catherine will enrich cathedral life with her many gifts." Following a degree in textile and design at the University of Leeds, Dean Catherine trained at Westcott House, Cambridge, before being ordained at 27 as one of the UK's first female priests. She then served as a parish priest in Yorkshire for 17 years, 9 of those as Vicar of Huddersfield. She was seconded to BBC Radio Leeds as religious affairs editor. Married with an adult son, Dean Catherine is keenly interested in the arts and in her spare time enjoys attending the theatre, painting, exercise, and the company of family and friends.
That concludes the headlines, and now we continue with death notices. We now continue with death notices. The following deaths have been announced. Atfield, Donald Julian Atfield, peacefully, aged 87. Ball, Christine Ball, peacefully at Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 62. Brown, Graham Donald Brown, suddenly after a fall while on a country walk. Bernand, Juliet Bernand, peacefully at home. Davis, Gwyneth Davis, peacefully at Abbots Barton Nursing Home, aged 98. Fisher, Angela Fisher, at Abbots Barton Care Home, aged 93. Galt, Claire Galt, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 45. Green, Stephen David Green, suddenly, aged 44. Lovelock, Dorothy Jean Lovelock, aged 85. Moss, Winifred Frieda Moss, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 94. Yaldron, Joan Edith Yaldron, peacefully in Winchester, aged 88. And Wilson, Mark Wilson, suddenly at home, aged 54. Looking back, we go back to the news from 200 years ago. Thank you, John.
Yes, February the 10th, 1817. Workers' hardship. It must be admitted that the distresses of the lower orders of the community are very severe, and it's still more lamentable that there should be found men capable of turning these distresses to an evil purpose in causing discontent and impatience against the government and its laws. The country are unanimous for economy. The army, the navy, the manufacturer, the artisan, the labourer are of necessity discharged to bring it about. It is a real distress, but it is temporary. The wickedness of endeavouring to make the lower orders believe these evils are occasioned by the regent or his ministers is dreadful. As well might be attempted to convince them that the prince can make the sun to shine or the rain to cease. Then the second small piece, workers clamp down. The discussions which have engaged the attention of Parliament this week are of a nature to excite general interest. The message from His Royal Highness the Prince Regent respecting seditious meetings was on Monday laid before both houses. The general belief is that some restrictions will be imposed, limiting greatly the assembling of numbers of individuals, publicly or privately, without the consent of a magistrate, except in corporate or chartered bodies.
And now two items from 100 years ago. February the 10th, 1917. German ship warning. The outstanding feature this week in connection with the war is the severing of diplomatic relations between the United States and Germany in consequence of the declaration of the Huns that they will sink all neutral trading vessels found in waters within a certain radius of the British and French coasts. War will follow if Germany puts her threat to sink American vessels without warning into practice. President Wilson told Congress that he refused to believe that the German authorities would carry out their threats, and only overt acts on their part would so convince him. But if they did so, and American lives were sacrificed, then he would come again before Congress. The second item is German ship attack. The American steamer Housatonic, 3,143 tons, belonging to the Housatonic Steamship Company of New York, was sunk on Saturday at noon by a German submarine off the Scilly Islands. The crew were rescued by a British armed steamer. The American consul at Plymouth had notified the State Department that the Housatonic was warned before being sunk. According to advices from Galveston, Texas, received via New York by Reuters agency, the Housatonic had 25 Americans among her crew and 12 men of other nationalities. She carried a cargo of grain.
And moving forward to 50 years ago, February the 11th, 1967. And the first item is headed Unwanted Discovery. The headmaster of Stanbridge School near Romsey, Mr. R.J. Gould, had a lucky escape from sudden death on Monday afternoon while he was working in the garden of his home. He hit a 25-pound unexploded shell with a pick. He said, "I was attending to a fire in the garden and was tearing up the stump of an old laurel. I hit something short and solid with the pick. I thought I had hit an old cast iron pipe, but I discovered that it was an unexploded shell." On Tuesday morning, two men from the Southern Command's bomb disposal squad gently lifted the shell, took it to an adjoining field, attached a charge, and detonated it. And the second item is headed Roman Discovery. The most richly furnished Roman burial yet found within the present city boundary of Winchester came to light in the summer of 1964, when a sewer trench for new houses was being dug in Grange Road, St. Cross. The burial itself was a cremation, but the burnt remains do not seem to have been in any container, as they were scattered in the middle of the pit. The offerings placed in the grave included gaming counters, as well as a setting for a meal. On a trencher were some pork bones, a platter, cup, bronze spoon, and two iron knives. There were also other platters and cups of fine red pottery. The date of this assemblage is between 70 and 95 AD.
And finally, 25 years ago from the edition dated February the 7th, 1992. First piece, Rail Door Danger. John Brown, Member of Parliament for Winchester and Alton, has written again today to the Secretary for Transport, the Right Honourable Malcolm Rifkind MP, urging him to take prompt action to warn British Rail passengers of the possible dangers of the inadvertent opening of slam-shut doors. Mr Brown, who's carried on a campaign for the last year to highlight the problem of the doors, said, "Given the life and death nature of this problem, there's an alarming propensity to delay and do nothing on the part of British Rail. Over the past 20 years, there have been more than 1,500 reported incidents involving 360 deaths, and there may have been many others that went unreported." And finally, airport decision. Eastleigh Council is still one step away from giving the final go-ahead for the proposed £200 million development of Eastleigh Airport. The council is waiting to reach an agreement on adequate guarantees from the developers on the completion of the Chickenhall Link Road as a through route. The construction costs of Section 6 and 7 need to be secured before all the legal niceties can be tied up. When finished, the road will provide a link between Junction 5 on the M27 and Bishop Stoke Road. The borough's airport panel also approved the list of strict controls in relation to ground running noise.
Hampshire Chronicle comment is read by Heather and will be followed by first person from John.
The insidious threat to the city centre. There will be people who will say that the departure of Next is the latest hammer blow to the future of Winchester as a shopping destination. The High Street is doomed. Everyone is going to West Quay and Festival Place. And anyway, internet shopping will kill off all the shops they predict smugly. It is a load of rubbish. The High Street is far more resilient than the doommongers say. Similar Knowles have been predicting the end of newspapers even longer. We are still here. And along with the High Street, we'll still be here for many years to come. The reason why can be found in the wonderful Winchester supplement inside this paper today. People are interested in this city and want to be here. Where people like congregating, then shops and business will also want to be. But there is a more insidious and serious threat to Winchester city centre as a whole. Next is departing a few months after planning permission was granted to convert the top two floors of its building into flats, taking the upper floor of its retail space. That undermines the mixed and balanced economy of Winchester. Shops like Next come and go, but the change of use to residential is a kind of cancer. As reported on page 20, an office in Chesil Street is the latest subject of conversion. The City Council has taken action to make it harder, but its new powers do not go far enough.
And first person this week is offered by Khalid Aziz, and he heads his piece, Standing Up to the Bullies. What are we to make of the current world with all its confusions? We have MPs tearing themselves apart over the conflict between their Brexit beliefs and those of the constituents. Some say it's mob rule, others an expression of democracy. And then we have politicians dancing on the head of a pin, such as Shadow Chancellor John McDonnell saying, "We will not stand in the way of Brexit," but not quite saying what he will vote for on it. Is it any wonder President Trump stands out as an exemplar of plain speaking? You may not like what he says, but at least you can understand what he feels and how strongly. That is, until in his post-factual world, he changes his mind. So what's going on? It seems to me all these people and many others are abusing their position of dominance. They're doing what they want because they can. One of the more laudable policies ever to come out of the European community is opposition to such abuses. Broadly, the EU Commission was against it because ultimately it's anti-competitive and leads to consumers being disadvantaged. And so it was, for example, that in the 1980s, there was the Dole banana case, where it was ruled that one banana producer was using its dominant position to push another out of the market. And this is the basis on which all anti-dumping laws were subsequently made. However, abuse of dominant positions continues. Take the latest revelation that despite adequate time and warnings, the miserable wretches who run the Premier League haven't been able to find it in their hearts, or, more importantly, their wallets, to provide adequate facilities, as obliged under the law, for disabled people attending their stadia. Some 83% of adults with a disability acquire it during their lifetime. So, this is surprising, given that most Premier matches seem to have a high incidence of one side hell-bent on trying to inflict disability on the other. How much media coverage has this calumny on the disabled received? Well, some. But watching current TV output, the craven coverage of matters football, including the latest excitement around the transfer window, you get no sense of irony from the sports presenters, who are usually failed footballers, as they salivate over transfer fee millions. It's time for the fat men in ill-fitting suits who control football to wake up and smell the liniment. Then we have the appalling BT spending a fortune, bloating the already enormous salaries of footballers with an even bigger deal for the Premier League. Just as for Sky customers, this results in hiked fees for viewers forced to take football as part of their sports package, even though they may wish only to watch the more modestly remunerated cricket and rugby. Now it appears that while all that was going on, football-obsessed BT bosses took their eye off the ball and let their Italian business go down the Swanee. No doubt they will say, we was robbed. And then there's the ongoing cock-up that is rural broadband. The telecoms regulator Ofcom missed a trick by not insisting that Openreach, the cable-laying division of BT, be spun off as a separate entity. BT has a vested interest in keeping the last mile to your house as antiquated copper wire so that you keep paying for it to be maintained. Everyone agrees that what's really needed is fibre to the premises wherever possible, and alternatives such as microwave technology where that's more cost-effective. Government has finally agreed to a universal service obligation where, by 2020, every householder will be able to legally demand a broadband service. But by that time, most of the developed world will already have developed much more powerful access. As life becomes more complex, we need protection from the large and powerful abusing their position. And this is partly behind the rise of populism. Politicians and business bosses should learn from this. We're waiting.
Belgarum has just two items this week, and we'll go over to Maria for those, please.
And the first item is headed Viking Pairs Charity Trek. Their predecessors sacked Winchester in 860 to 866, but these two Vikings invaded the city in a more peaceful cause. Dressed in traditional Viking attire, including wigs and even a longship, the pair were in the city to complete a seven-day marathon. Paul Smith, 35, from Farringdon, and Dave Holby-Wilinski, 36, from Basingstoke, embarked on their 183-mile journey to raise money for Naomi House and Jack's Place, the hospices in Sutton Scotney, and Daisy's Dream in Reading. Travelling in their makeshift Viking longboat, they walked from Reading to Winchester via Swindon and stopping off at Basingstoke and Newbury before completing the final mile outside Winchester Cathedral. Surrounded by friends and family, members of charities and the Mayor of Winchester, Jane Rutter. It was originally supposed to be a jog, but on the first day of the marathon saga, Dave injured his leg, which meant fast walking instead and longer hours, 54 in total. But they say the setback actually meant they managed to interact with a lot more people and get more exposure. After completing the challenge, Mr. Smith said, "We've seen the Mayor of Swindon and the Mayor of Winchester. It's just been amazing. We've been on our feet for roughly 9 hours every day, but we feel very privileged to be able to do what we've done. Even with bashed up feet and wonky shoulders, it's been an absolute joy." Mr. Holby Wilinski added, "People have pulled up beside us in their cars and given us money. Even homeless people have donated. It's been such a humbling experience, a real privilege." And there are two photographs for this article. One with the Vikings, but were both of them inside their longboat, but one outside Winchester Cathedral and the other in the High Street. And they're very well wrapped up, which is just as well at the moment. And they also look very, very hairy. And the second item, new view after car park comes down. There's a new view of the city for people to enjoy following the demolition of the 1970s multi-storey car park at Friars Gate. The structure has been carefully knocked down, concrete lump by concrete lump, leaving open the site. and offering fresh views of the back of King's Walk. The open land will be converted into a temporary car park, pending the redevelopment of Silver Hill. But as the Chronicle reported last week, a redevelopment appears to be at least 5 years away. So this new view will become an established feature of the townscape.
Now, this week's announcements, and we start with What's On. Here's a selection of forthcoming events in and around Winchester. On Friday the 17th of February at 5 p.m. in Winchester College Chapel, the chapel choir is giving a recital of works by Byrd, Bach, Bruckner and Tippett in aid of the choir's forthcoming tour of Germany. Tickets cost £10 and £15 and are available online from www.ticketsource.co.uk/wincoll. W-I-N-C-O-L-L. On Saturday the 18th of February at 7:30 p.m. in Winchester Cathedral, the choir and orchestra of Bournemouth University present Canticles of Light, including works by Puccini, Chilcot and Haydn. Tickets from the Cathedral box office can be got by ringing 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. On Monday the 20th of February at 3 p.m. in the Learning Centre in Winchester Cathedral Inner Close, there's the monthly Tea at Three, a gathering for older people and those alone for tea, cake and companionship. All are welcome. The cream tea costs £2.50. On Thursday, the 20th of February, at 1:15 p.m. at the Hampshire Record Office in Sussex Street, Bill Gosney talks about his research and the work undertaken for his new book, Hospitals of the Petersfield Union, 1914 to 1918. And at Winchester Discovery Centre, the Mayor's Choice exhibition of a selection of watercolours of the local landscapes continues until Sunday, February the 26th. The Hampshire Pride exhibition continues until Tuesday, February the 28th. And in the gallery, the exhibition The Romantic Thread in British Art, drawn from Southampton's collection of paintings, prints and drawings from the late 18th century to the present day, continues until Thursday the 5th of March. Finally, the exhibition of 9 Barton Stacey Nights continues at the Hampshire Record Office until Thursday the 9th of March. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 10th of February at 7:29 a.m. and begins at 5:11 p.m. On Wednesday the 5th of February, it ends at 7:18 a.m. and begins at 5:22 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And now we continue with items of general news. Thank you, Maria.
Soaring spectacle is captured in the skies. A stunning moment was captured when thousands of starlings performed an aerial display in Winchester. The murmuration was photographed by Roy Venkatesh in Winnell on Sunday and shows thousands of birds soaring through the sky. The phenomenon happens in winter months, and there are a number of theories as to why, including suggestions that it keeps the birds warm and makes them less vulnerable to attacks from other animals. Mr. Venkatesh said, "This one started at about 4:45 p.m. and went on for about half an hour yesterday. It gets better. It will change from day to day according to the sunset times and the light levels. I don't think it has happened before there, but generally speaking, the starlings do this during the winter months, probably roosting together for warmth and protection. I know of regular haunts in Brighton and on Somerset levels, but these days it is rare to have them in the city. You never know. Winnell might become a new regular winter roosting site now they've found it. I am retired and live in Basingstoke, so made the trip down yesterday to witness this mesmerising spectacle. And there are two stunning photographs of this with one of the murmurations, which is the murmuration at its peak, and it looks like a huge mushroom. And the other one is a great cloud of starlings hovering above trees.
And here's some more happy news under the headline, Ancient City Charms Again. The secret's out again. Winchester is the UK's best place to live. Brimming with pubs, weekly earnings higher than most of the UK, and the crime rate amongst the lowest in England, the city was voted the best place to live in a survey by the Halifax Bank. And if that's not enough, its residents were also said to be some of the happiest in the country. This is not the first time that the historic city, once capital of England, has been recognised for its charm. It placed third in a national study on quality of life by Halifax in 2014 and fourth in 2015. Winchester's rise to the top also comes after being heralded, quotes, "the perfect English city" in the annual Sunday Times Best Places to Live guide in March last year. The city, home to around 45,000 people, boasts historic buildings like its impressive cathedral and Hospital of St. Cross, as well as thriving shops and restaurants. Its historic feel has also made it a popular TV and film destination with Les Miserables, BBC dramas The Hollow Crown and Wolf Hall, and the Netflix series The Crown, all filmed here. There are also a number of historical and literary connections, such as Jane Austen and Anthony Trollope. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Jane Rutter, said, "I, like most Winchester residents, was delighted but not surprised that Winchester was selected as the best place to live in the country, not once but twice in the past 12 months. We seem to combine the advantages of a city, a cultural and culinary centre, with a myriad of tempting independent shops and eateries, with the beauty of the countryside and the South Downs National Park on our doorstep. All of this with the ease of access of a country town, that retains an almost village-like atmosphere. We have excellent local schools, both state and private, together with strong and supportive local communities and a good social mix. I love discovering new cafes down side streets, popping into the Discovery Centre and getting carried away by some fascinating exhibition, having a night out at the Theatre Royal and being blown away by the professionalism of the Operatic Society, the stream of festivals that bring jazz or chamber music or sublime choral music into my life. Quirky little shops that sell amazing gifts. Buskers with their bubbles of music on the high street. And most of all, I love Winchester at Christmas. The market and carol services, when children with their shining faces reflect all that's good and hopeful and joyous." And that very cheerful piece is accompanied by two pictures. The first is a view across the water meadows from St. Catherine's Hill, showing the panorama of the beautiful city. And the second is a shot along Winchester High Street.
Schools get £10 million for refurbishment. A group of Hampshire schools have been given some good news to cheer them through the winter. Four of the county schools will receive a boost of £10 million for refurbishments, including Oliver's Battery Primary. Hampshire County Council leader has welcomed a £10 million funding boost to modernise these four schools. At his latest Decision Day meeting, Councillor Roy Perry congratulated the County Council's Children's and Property Services for successfully securing funding from the government's Education Funding Agency to reclad and refurbish the school buildings which were built in the 1960s. Fay Wood, head teacher of Oliver's Battery Primary, said, "I am absolutely thrilled that Oliver's Battery Primary School will be undergoing such an extensive renovation. The improvement to the learning environment will build on the great education and amazing opportunities that we offer all of the children. They are already talking about what colours and designs they would like. We can't wait for the building to start." And there's a picture of a group of children back with a teacher behind them, waving and smiling their enthusiasm as they celebrate the news. The schools have said that the money will be spent on recladding the outside of the building, new double-glazed windows and a new roof. It will also be insulated, which will make it much more energy efficient. Inside there will be new flooring, ceilings and lighting, and redecoration throughout. County Council leader Roy Perry said, "Securing this major investment from the government is welcome news. While structurally sound, the buildings at these schools are in need of work, poorly insulated and with high energy costs. Recladding the buildings will not only reduce those costs and help protect the environment, but also extend the life of the buildings, making them more sustainable and delivering the best value for money for taxpayers." Councillor Peter Edgar, Executive Member for Education, added, "This investment is very important, as the quality of school buildings is a significant contributor to the success of a child's learning. These reclad buildings will create brighter, modern-looking and inspiring buildings for pupils to thrive and succeed in the future. The schools will be reclad with a new energy-efficient insulated envelope, which the County Council already used successfully in over 30 Hampshire school buildings. Recladding the schools extends the life of the buildings at a fraction of the cost of constructing new schools."
Backing for bid to deal with parking at station. Measures to clamp down on parking near Mitchell Devil Station have been approved. The Council's Traffic and Parking Committee decided to impose a range of waiting and parking restrictions to deal with on-street parking. The station car park is regularly full, meaning commuters are using the roads around the village to park. According to council officers, there are around 50 unrestricted on-street parking spaces near the station, which will be cut by 20 to 25 spaces. The Traffic Regulation Order, TRO, will be implemented through a combination of single yellow lines and permit holder only parking. The plans are also aimed at solving visibility and obstruction issues, as well as access problems along Overton Road, and to provide passing places for traffic. The matter was originally considered at a meeting on November the 9th, but a decision was deferred so the council could consult with the parish council and South West Trains. However, the parish council said they are not proposing to increase commuter parking, and South West Trains and Network Rail have no plans to deliver additional spaces. Mitchell Devon Parish Councillor John Botham confirmed the council had started investigating the feasibility of providing a shuttle bus service to and from the station, but they had not received enough interest from commuters. But Ewan Worthington, a resident of Stoke Charity, said, "It is nearly impossible to park at Mitchell Devon Station at 9 o'clock these days. I am sympathetic with the local people, but we live a long way away. A minibus is not an alternative." Liberal Democrat County Councillor Jackie Porter said, "I am supporting the residents over the commuters on this occasion. I think it is difficult for commuters. I do believe the commuters' battle should be with South West Trains. The parking restrictions were recommended for approval, with Councillor Weston proposing an amendment to remain engaged with key stakeholders in the process. And there are two photographs with this article, one of Mitchell devastation and Overton Road, where the cars are parked without any brake whatsoever.
Refugee families. Five refugee families will have moved into Winchester by the end of this month, the Chronicle can reveal. It's understood they'll be living in private rented accommodation instead of council housing. It comes after the City Council said last year that they will do their bit to help refugees fleeing from war-torn Syria amid the refugee crisis last year. Last year, former council leader Stephen Godfrey said, "Winchester has a proud track record of helping people in need. The Zimbabwe refugee crisis is one example. We're waiting to hear what government is asking of local authorities, but we're already gearing up to work with colleagues at Hampshire County Council, registering private housing providers and private landlords." At the Winchester Cabinet Housing Committee, City Councillor Ian Tate asked whether the refugees would be housed in council accommodation. And the Chief Housing Officer at Winchester City Council, Richard Botham, said none are in council accommodation. They're in rented accommodation, and some landlords have accepted the refugees at a lower than market rate.
The cathedral receives a royal music donation. In her long life, the Queen has taken an interest in almost countless number of charities, institutions, and causes. But she has never forgotten her links with the great churches of the Church of England. And now she has donated a grant towards a new piece of choral music to be sung in Winchester Cathedral. The Friends of Winchester Cathedral Charity has received a £2,500 gift from the Patrons Fund, set up by the Queen as part of her 90th birthday celebrations. Throughout her reign since the 1950s, the Queen has been the patron of the Friends, which support many aspects of cathedral life, including its highly acclaimed music. The gift will be put towards a specially commissioned work to be performed by the Winchester Cathedral Girls' Choir, which is entirely funded by Friends. Bruce Parker, chairman of the Friends and former BBC South Today presenter, is delighted with the news which came from Buckingham Palace last week. He said this is a generous gift on behalf of a patron who has supported us consistently for many years. We are extremely grateful to Her Majesty and hope that the music we commission will be a fine and lasting way to celebrate her patronage. Sir Stuart Etherington, chairman of the Board of Trustees for the Patrons Fund, said, "The fund is very pleased to be able to support the Friends of Winchester Cathedral with its valuable work. It is among hundreds of organisations for which the Queen acts as a patron, which between them make a difference to causes and communities in the UK and throughout the Commonwealth." And there are two photographs, a black and white one of two rows of pensioners on Maundy Thursday in the cathedral in April 1979, as the Queen is there for the service, and a coloured one of Her Majesty taken recently in a lovely purple coat, smiling.
Five mayors set to hit the heights. The Mayor of Winchester will be abseiling down a famous landmark in the name of charity. Councillor Jane Rutter will be suspended from the Spinnaker Tower in Gunwharf Quays, Portsmouth, to raise money for charity. She will be taking part on April the 30th alongside five other mayors and council officials, including the Mayor of Eastleigh, Councillor Des Scott, and the Mayor of Southampton, Councillor Cathy McEwing. "I am not scared or worried, I'm just hoping for low winds so that I am not blown around," said Councillor Scott. The mayors will go down in pairs, and each abseil will take about half an hour. The Lord Mayor of Portsmouth, Councillor David Fuller, will be leading the challenge, which will see the mayors climbing down the 110-metre tower. Councillor Fuller raised the idea while all of the mayors were having a meal in Fareham, and all of the attendees agreed to take part. "I'm really looking forward to it. I've done lots of fundraisers before, but this is going to be great fun, said the Mayor of Eastleigh, who added he isn't afraid of heights. It is a great way to raise a lot of money for lots of different charities. At the event, there will be fireworks, live music and food for spectators to enjoy. We hope that people will rally behind the event and offer any donation they can to recognise the bravery of all those who dare to take part, said Councillor McEwing. Some of the charities that will benefit include One Community, Cerebral Palsy Sport and Countess Mambatten Hospice. Each mayor will choose three charities to benefit. And there's a picture of the five mayors. Well, actually, there are six people in the photograph, but five of them are mayors. In all their regalia, which I don't suppose they'll be using in their abseil.
And here's some important news for two of our local schools in a piece headed Joint Trust Formation. Two schools in Alresford will form a joint trust in an effort to maintain and improve standards following a critical Ofsted report. Perrin School and Sunhill Junior School have announced that they will form a multi-agency trust known as a MAT. The MAT has overall responsibilities for governance and for the performance of each school, although each school still will retain its own governing body. Following the Ofsted review at Sunhill last October, the school was placed under a directed academy order. The school was rated inadequate overall, citing weaknesses in teaching and pupils making insufficient improvement in reading, writing and mathematics. The report added that the interim head teacher, Chris Riley, had made positive changes in the school since taking over. The order requires Sunhill to become an academy and to be sponsored by an existing academy. Perrin Secondary School was approached by the Department of Education to take on that role and become the school sponsor. Changes to Sunhill will include the recruitment of a new head teacher and other teachers if required. The head teacher of Perrin, Steve Jones, said, "Becoming a MAT will help strengthen further links between Perrin's and Hill at Sunhill Junior. We can develop opportunities for staff at both schools to gain cross-stage experience and we can share resources, knowledge and expertise. Most importantly, we can work together as a community to offer all our students the best possible education and opportunities with a shared ethos and vision. The process of forming the MAT will take about 6 months, with the planned start date being September 1st, 2017. There's a rather charming picture of all of the children of Sunhill Junior School pictured on their playground, obviously in sunnier times because they're all wearing summer dresses and shielding their eyes.
Young Farmers Grand Home Donation. Alresford Young Farmers charity for the last year has been Marfield Care Home in Winchester, and they presented a cheque for £1,084.69 to the home. Their chosen charity is close to the heart of some of the members, and funds have been raised through meals, Christmas carols, and even a muck lug, where members delivered manure by the bagful to residents in the Alresford area. The money raised for Marlfield is due to be used for more wheelchair-friendly picnic benches, raised garden beds, and a trip out for the residents. Alresford Young Farmers, who next year will be collecting for a different charity, would like to thank everyone who helped fundraise and donate towards this good cause.
Phoebe gets England Corps. Football. Winchester's Phoebe Williams will be representing England under-16s for the next week. The Year 11 King's School pupil will represent her country in the UEFA Development Tournament from February the 10th to the 17th. Winchester-born Phoebe started her football career at the Winchester City Flyers, progressed to Hampshire Centre of Excellence, and is now captain of the under-16 squad at Southampton Girls Academy. Her fellow under-16s player, Kaylee Rendell, is also on standby for the competition in Loughborough. Phoebe is one of five players from Southampton's Regional Talent Club on England duty this month. Sophia Farrow, who plays for Southampton under-16s, has been selected for England under-17s training camp later this month, where the Lionesses will play games against the USA and Norway. Elsewhere, Mia Cruikshank, Ella Morris and Alicia Ware have all been called up for England's under-15s three-day training camp and match at St George's Park starting on February the 20th. Since its inception at the start of the season, the Regional Talent Club has enjoyed great success, with 10 players receiving international recognition from England, Ireland and Wales. It is great to see the potential in the girls beginning to turn into excellence, both on and off the pitch, commented Martina Heath, head of women's and girls football. The continual hard work and dedication that both the players and their families put into growing and striving towards being the best is admirable, and they are all now prospering from this. And there's an inset of Phoebe Williams in action.
Here's a startling headline. Councillor calls Road a dreadful place. A Winchester councillor has described part of a city estate as a dreadful place as she pressed council chiefs to hurry up and improve it. City Councillor Eileen Berry said she's concerned that not enough is being done to improve Trussell Crescent in Wick. As reported previously in the Chronicle, the area is set for a £110,000 revamp. A further £40,000 could be spent on parking improvements, but a decision on this was deferred at a previous meeting. Councillor Berry fears the building programme won't go ahead due to residents' complaints, and she's called for the work to start. She has said that the area is a dreadful place. However, a leading council officer said work to improve the area is already underway, but has been delayed due to bad weather conditions.
End of line for split ticketing. Big overhaul for rail ticket pricing. Wallet-busting train journeys might be a thing of the past after it was announced that rail fares will undergo a massive overhaul. The Chronicle has previously reported how train operators are accused of overcharging passengers by hiding the cheapest fares for many routes. In the know, commuters travelling from Southampton and elsewhere can make substantial savings by split ticketing, so they buy a ticket for each leg of their journey instead of a single ticket for the whole trip. Now, new measures to be trialled will see fares for long connecting journeys removed from the system where cheaper alternatives exist. Single journey pricing will be introduced for some routes to make it simpler for passengers to know if they would be better off buying two single tickets or a return. There are also plans to make ticket vending machines more user-friendly. The new system is set to be trialled on selected routes from May this year, including the cross-country rail service. Jacqueline Starr, Rail Delivery Group's Director of Customer Experience, said, "We know customers find it hard to get the right ticket for their journey due to complex rules and regulations built up by governments over decades. There are more than 16 million different train fares, and many of which nobody has ever bought. This also makes it much more difficult to give passengers the right simple options on ticket machines." Rail Future, an independent organisation campaigning for better rail services, said, "Although the trials were a step in the right direction, there is still a very long way to go."
Science Centre unveils its new studio. Winchester Science Centre has officially unveiled its new invention studio. The brand new zone contains cutting-edge challenges across programming, aerodynamics and engineering for all ages. The launch event saw school children and community figures come together to be some of the very first to try out the new space. Ben Ward, Chief Executive of Winchester Science Centre and Planetarium, said, "The new space is designed for the tinkerer in all of us, a space where anyone young or old can explore, create, construct, and be challenged. This exciting zone is set to be a fantastic addition to the centre and our other hands-on exhibitions. It's designed to spark curiosity and will allow visitors to become the designer, the programmer, or the engineer of their own inventions. They'll be able to try their hand at programming and constructing, as well as create their own complicated wing shapes and BBC microbits. The studio was unveiled by Roma Agrawal, a structural engineer who worked on the Shard, along with Mr. Ward. It is open to the general public on weekends and throughout the annual school holidays. During term time, it will be used as a dedicated space for school workshops and education, supporting the 37,000 school children the Science Centre engage with each year. And there is a picture of a group of children with an instructor in the invention studio. Very busy inventing, I suppose.
Minister says thanks to prison staff. A government minister has spoken to frontline staff at a prison to hear their concerns. Winchester Prison has had a spate of suicides, and the prison is looking into preventative measures as well as improving safety for officers. Prisons Minister Sam Geimer visited the Young Offenders Wing to hear concerns from the frontline staff, as well as speaking to the Governor and prisoners. The Minister thanked staff for the vital work and for delivering major reforms to improve safety and to reduce reoffending. The visit comes as ministers embark on whole-scale reforms to the prison system, including an additional £100 million to bolster frontline staff by 2,500 and a major package of safety measures. Winchester Prison has been allocated an additional £584,000 to help tackle the rise in drugs, reduce violence and improve safety for inmates and staff. Mr. Geimer said, "I came to Winchester to thank the staff for their vital work in helping to turn prisoners' lives around." And there's a picture there of the minister standing outside the prison, looking suitably serious and intent.
Some crafty goings on. It was a case for Mulder and Scully at a Winchester school. A UFO had appeared to crash into the playground of Westgate Lower School. However, concerned parents need not worry, as the UFO was part of a school activity and not of an alien invasion of Winchester. The craft was part of an event designed to promote creative writing as part of a storytelling week and all through school deep learning day. The flying saucer was actually built by a team of creative parents. It looks magnificent. It's all surrounded by police tape to keep it safe, and it's clearly constructed out of assorted boxes and plastic and sticky bits and, oh, it's wonderful. So they've arranged it beautifully in the playground. By the staff did that bit.
Lesson does grow on trees. Young adventurers are experiencing a different side of the outdoors thanks to a new partnership. Oliver's Battery Primary School in Winchester has joined with provider Little Explorers to allow the children to experience a new kind of learning at Forest School. The children spend their Tuesday afternoons in the outdoors doing activities such as making crafts, dens, and climbing trees. Alia, age 9, said, "If we hadn't had Forest School, we wouldn't have learned how to use everyday objects such as sticks in an exciting way. We made Santas, dream catchers, dens, fires, windows and slingshots. I love Forest School." The scheme, which was made possible thanks to the backing of the Hampshire County Council's Trailblazer Drive, was embraced by the school as an extension to their curriculum. Head teacher Faye Wood said, "We already use the outside space for teaching, and now we can offer a forest school. Being active outdoors leads to happy and engaged learners." And there's a picture of a group of the children crouched down around a fire, well, barbecue, really. And it looks like they're cooking something on skewers, probably something delicious.
And here the Chronicle takes the chance to congratulate the success of a local business. Headline, Medal Success for Family-Run Vineyard. An Arlesford family-run vineyard has been awarded a silver medal in the WVA Wine of the Year competition. Rames Vineyard, on two fields near Cheriton, is the newest in the county. The vines were first planted on the family farm in April 2011. The first release is a Blanc de Noir, made with three classic Champagne grapes, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier, and harvested by hand by the Rames family. The result, says the vineyard, is an elegant, pale gold, fresh and well-balanced sparkling wine, bottle fermented in the traditional method. The Blanc de Noir brew was made by award-winning winemakers Emma Rice and Jacob Ledley in the traditional method, with a long second stage of fermentation in the bottle. It has spent 26 months gently developing in this way. Only 900 bottles of the wine have been produced, and each bottle is hand-numbered. Vineyard owners Robert and Augusta Rames said, "We're thrilled to be awarded this very special silver medal right at the beginning of our journey. We're proud of the family team and long hours of work establishing our vines and our farm, and of our superb winemakers, Emma and Jacob." Later this year, there'll be the release of two more wines from Rames Vineyard, a 2014 Blanc de Noir, followed by their classic reserve in the autumn. Rames English Sparkling 2013 wine can be purchased at the Naked Grape in Arlesford, Four Marks in Hungerford, the Fareham Wine Cellar in Fareham, and the Titchbourne Arms. There's a charming image of the farmers Robert and Augusta Rames walking through their vineyard looking very happy, and so they should. Good luck to them.
Now, a contemplative piece charting the city's rich heritage by James Wilde. Winchester was the first capital of England, and due to that ancient status, it has retained an importance and special atmosphere that outweighs other much larger cities. With only a population of 45,000, nevertheless, its law courts hear cases of far greater importance than in Southampton and Portsmouth. It is home to Hampshire County Council and to a senior bishop in the Church of England. The earliest signs of settlement in Winchester are from the Iron Age. There are three Iron Age hill forts, Orams Arbour, St Catherine's Hill and Worthy Down, all nearby the town. And after the Roman conquest, it was known as Venta Belgarum, meaning the town or meeting place of the Belgae. At the beginning of the 3rd century, Winchester was given protective stone walls and was one of the largest towns in Roman Britain. Winchester High Street today remains the oldest, one of the oldest continuously used thoroughfares in Europe. The Romans first laid it out in the 1st century, and there's a small section of Roman wall on the weirs. With the coming of the Saxons, Winchester became even more important. In the late 10th century, the Old Minster was enlarged as a centre of the cult of the 9th century Bishop of Winchester, St Swithin. Winchester was attacked by the Vikings in the year 860 and again in 866. And the form of the city today dates to Reconstruction in the late 9th century, when King Alfred the Great obliterated the Roman street plan in favour of a new grid to provide better defences against the Vikings. And it's thanks to Alfred that Winchester became capital of England. That importance was maintained after the Norman conquest, but gradually the city was eclipsed by London. Henry III, who's known as Henry of Winchester, was born at Winchester Castle in 1207. The Great Hall, one of the few reminders of the royal presence in the city, was begun in 1222 by Henry III and was once the heart of the castle, even used as Parliament between 1330 and 1449. The hall is famous for the huge 18-foot diameter King Arthur's Round Table, which was made between 1250 and 1280. And Thomas Malory, the 15th century writer, was convinced that Winchester was Camelot, which may be why it displays the legendary table. It was in the Great Hall that Sir Walter Raleigh was tried for treason and condemned to death in 1603, though the sentence wasn't carried out until 1618, when he was beheaded in Whitehall. The city cross, known as the Butter Cross, has been dated to the 15th century. It features 12 statues of the Virgin Mary, saints, and various historical figures. The Bishop of Winchester, William of Wickham, founded the private school Winchester College in 1382, originally set up to train 70 poor boys for the church. Winchester was a walled city and had 5 city gates, Kingsgate, South, North, East and Westgate, but only Kingsgate and the Westgate survive today. The military links that evolved from Winchester's importance are still to be seen with the impressive peninsular barracks and the bases at Flowerdown and Worthydown. The plague hit Winchester in 1665 and 1666, and there is an obelisk remembering those who died. The victims were so many that they were buried in plague pits near St. Catherine's Hill. The city mill is a rare urban corn water mill, rebuilt in 1743 on the site of earlier mills dating back to King Richard I in the 12th century. The novelist Jane Austen died in Winchester on July the 18th, 1817, and is buried in the cathedral. While staying in Winchester from mid-August to October 1819, John Keats wrote a number of poems, most notably To Autumn. History is everywhere if you look in the city, especially if you look above the shops. You can see the ages of the buildings around you in the fascinating roofscapes.
Early years minister visits preschool. Winchester MP Steve Brine brought the early years minister, Caroline Dynage, to the city to visit St Paul's preschool in Full Flood. The Winchester MP met the St Paul's team last spring, and having discussed a range of issues, pledged to arrange a ministerial visit to the nursery to explore in depth the issues surrounding government plans for 30 hours free childcare. Following a tour of the nursery, Ms. Dynage, MP for Gosport and a former Winchester City Councillor, had a discussion with the preschool leaders as well as other providers from across the constituency. The meeting was aided by the presence of top civil servants from the department, and Ms. Dynage confirmed a number of points, as well as to ensure a clear line of communication over the coming months. Mr. Brine said, "Our manifesto commitment to deliver 30 hours free childcare for working parents and childcare settings who want it is really important and a huge step forward. But it must be applied in each area in a way that respects and builds upon what we have already, and ensure there are no unintended consequences before it's rolled out nationwide later this year." Claire Shepherd from St Paul's Preschool said, "This policy represents a huge shift in early years setting and how they operate. Our overarching concern is the financial viability and sustainability of our setting. We really valued the opportunity for the minister to listen to our concerns over the implementation of the policy and the potential impact on settings like ours. We were glad of the opportunity to invite other early years providers to share their views." And there is a picture with this article of the team, St Paul's team, with the minister and Steve Brine.
And that concludes our extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers. Maria Head.
Goodbye.
John Regan.
Bye-bye now.
And Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
Heather, it's nice to have you join the team.
I'm glad.
After we're afraid that Brian Woodruff had to step down. And from me, Farah Williams, goodbye and enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label in the wallet, please ensure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside. Thank you.